Adam Morrison here. When it comes to top-tier contracting, my go-to choice is McGilvery Environmental. They're not just any contractor. They're the best in Spokane and North Idaho. With years of experience, they handle it all. New construction, meticulous repairs, and asphalt overlays. From start to finish, they ensure your project is completed with the highest quality end results. And here's the scoop for this year. McGilvery Environmental has expanded its services to include asphalt paving. That means top-notch commercial parking lots, residential driveways, and road construction. So, ready to kickstart your project? Reach out to Kip at McGilvery Environmental by calling 208-556-6384 for your free estimate. Don't forget to mention my name, Adam from the Perimeter, and experience the difference that McGilvery Environmental brings to the table. Again, that's 208-556-6384, McGilvery Environmental. My number one choice for all my contracting needs.
HDG Architecture is proud to be a sponsor of The Perimeter with Adam Morrison. There is another podcast that you all should be listening to, and it's called If Not Now, When? This podcast, which Josh Hsiang of HDG Architecture hosts, has a clear mission to ignite positive change within the Spokane community. On the podcast, Josh brings together diverse individuals from city officials, business owners, journalists, influencers, and big thinkers to have meaningful conversations about what we can do to help transform downtown Spokane into an even more vibrant and robust community. By talking to these movers and shakers, the podcast aims to inspire and empower its listeners by actively shaping their city's future. You can find the If Not Now, When podcast wherever you are listening to The Perimeter at, or you can find it in the description of this episode.
Welcome to The Perimeter, episode 4, presented by McGilvery Environmental. I got Brennan, the producer, on with me. Good to see you. Got a lot of questions and answers this week. I'm excited for it. We're going to go through some of that. It was part of a giveaway deal that I think was pretty neat, and we got a lot of positive feedback from the listeners, which we always enjoy. That's not just lip service. We always want to make this show enjoyable because we know people have a lot of options for podcasting, so we want to stay in that lane where people are listening to us, obviously. And so let's get it fired up.
Yeah, totally. We have a ton of questions, and I was in the thing. I was like, we're going to feature four and you're going to get a beanie, but I think we have enough Gonzaga swag to give everyone something, so I'll figure out how to get all this swag to the people.
Cool.
Might just need to come to the studio, but yeah, I got a lot of good Gonzaga questions, some questions about you playing basketball. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start with some Gonzaga questions first?
Go for it.
I think this is on top of everyone's mind, and you've talked about it the last two episodes, and it's, you know, it's a Big 12 conversation, but is there any part of you that thinks that maybe Gonzaga should stay in the WCC? Is there any reason to, is there anything that makes sense for that?
Yeah. So here's the reasons why the WCC is still a good conference, and we shouldn't thumb our nose to it. Not that Gonzaga is doing it, but as a fan base, it's been a 2-bid league for 10 plus years. We had a 3-bid league when San Francisco got in, when Todd Golden was there and before he went to Florida. So it's a good conference basketball wise. I think that season they graded out as the fifth best basketball conference, right? So he beat out a Power Five,
yeah,
which is fantastic. I think the Jesuit aspect to it makes sense to, you know, be in the same room with people like-minded thinking, aligned thinking, you know, similar size universities, not state schools. Mm-hmm. You both have the same challenges of raising money, smaller gym sizes, all those things are positive. I think travel makes way more sense than any other conference. Obviously, the Pac-12 before it dissolved would have made sense, but everything on the West Coast, that's dollars and cents. That's less time traveling. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of positive factors for student athletes that you have. And then the history of it. I know that sounds funny, but like it is cool to be a conference full of just Jesuit and small Christian universities. I mean, it's different. I don't care if you are a believer or not or whatever. It's just different. I think different is neat. in today's, you know, sports world, which is, it's hard to find unique stuff like that with a power brand like Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. So those aspects I think are fantastic. My personal opinion, I think moving to the Big 12 is wise, and I've gone over that, and I just think dollars and cents, it's a must mm-hmm. to fund the other athletic, part of the other athletic, you know, programs in the athletic department, and also your own program. But it's not like we're in the Big West and it's dying or something like right. that. That we're just so far ahead of everybody else. St. Mary's is fantastic, another top 25 team. San Francisco has been decent the last few years. So the conference is not complete terrible, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So, but in today's society, as everybody knows, this is not even a hot take. Like it's capitalism, it's money, right? Yep. And it's not greed. It's finances is more is what I should say. Mm-hmm. It's, you got to balance your book and you got to try to make a profit if you have a big brand to fund other things. It's the way athletics works and yeah. at the university level. So,
and they're absolutely leaving money on the table if they didn't make the move. Like,
yes.
Do you think St. Mary's and San Francisco make a similar move if we leave?
Well, that's the thing, is I don't know where they would fit in as far as a bigger conference, but yeah, they probably, if you're them, you go, well, let's see if we can maybe be a basketball only to the Mountain West or we can be a basketball only to like the Big West. I don't know what that would look like, but if the WCC would start to crumble, then those programs would,
yeah.
I think Santa Clara is a value add for a smaller conference. If that makes sense.
Totally, yeah.
You know, because they got, you know, fan base, they have, you know, programs that are trying to win, it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. They've had NBA players play there, whatever. So I don't know, man. It's really fascinating to watch it unfold. I am like 60-40 yes for it, just based on the financial aspect of it, but I'm not totally like, screw the WCC. I like the history behind it. I like winning the league almost every year.
Yeah.
You know, like there's value in that too. So great question by the listener, but it is fascinating to see, you know, conference realignment, and with a big brand, you don't want to be left out in the cold.
Yeah. The one question I have, like if this happens and we're playing in the Big 12 next year, do you think we keep like a yearly game with St. Mary's? Like, I feel like that's
a good point.
It's such a history there.
I think we would, because I think yeah. Fuey and Randy Bennett's relationship are good enough. They'd be like, all right, let's either play each other at home or just play a neutral every year in your state or something. Like, we'll play in Seattle mm-hmm. and then you know, we'll play at wherever the Oracle or whatever the
right, yeah.
Warriors play. You know what I'm saying? Totally, that's right yeah. next door to Walnut Creek. Mm-hmm. I would like to keep that rivalry going, but I don't know, man. That's a really good question. I didn't even think about that.
Totally.
Yeah.
It would be a shame, but I mean,
things die. So
things die, though, too.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just how it is.
We stopped playing Washington
for a few years. Yeah.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hi. We're the Greens. Our family is just like any other family.
Quiet on set!
Okay, maybe not. But just like every family, we need banking solutions that work for the way we live. And ICCU has everything we need. We're looking forward to showing you how it works for us. Excuse me.
Moving on to like the Maui Invitational, Danielle asks, how do you suggest that we stop Edie?
Fair. That's a really, really good question. Okay, so let's just give context to people maybe not remembered last year. Player of the year, decided to come back. I think it's a wise decision. In that Portland, we played him at that PK80 or what, 85 or whatever, it's Portland Classic, whatever it was mm-hmm. called. And they absolutely destroyed us. And a lot of it was Zach Edey. Their mm-hmm. backcourt played really good, but I think he had 25 plus. He had one of his signature games against us. We tried fronting him, and I'm going to go into some basketball terminology, and if it goes over people's head, I apologize. I'm not trying to, but we tried full fronting him And then ball pressure on the passer, that didn't work because he's 7'4", and it's legit 7'4", or whatever, 7'3". Then we tried playing behind and letting him get a catch, but taking away angles, and then double teaming from either top side, which is called a blue, or bottom side, which is called black, and then white is where you double off a non-shooter, and then red is you double from the strong side. There's a bunch of different coverages you can do. And blue didn't work, double from the top.
Yeah.
And then white didn't work, or black didn't work, because he could go, he's really good going either way, middle or like baseline, mm-hmm. and shooting with either hand. And then he's really good at creating angles with his legs, so like typical like old school post up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so tall that like you can't really contest. So to Danielle, this is going to be such a cop out. I don't know what we do.
Yeah.
I know if we stand him up early, maybe, and not let him get really good position, understanding that we might take some cheap fouls, but you got to be physical with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully on the offensive end, you get him in foul trouble to get him off the floor. I mean, that's such a cliched way to say it, but like if you can get a guy off the floor being aggressive offensively, it's a bonus for you. But they're really good at finding him in the right spots and getting him angle touches. Now, do I think he's going to have that type of game? No, because I view him as a player that the first time you play against him, since you can't really, obviously you know what he is, but you don't, you've never played against that. You don't, you have a package, but you don't know really what to do. I think after a second time, we'll have a better strategy, or we won't be as shocked on some of his stuff. For me, in that game, their backcourt killed us. And so maybe our strategy is, all right, we can't, obviously we don't want Edie to score 40, but if he gets 25 and we kind of, you know, make him run up and down the floor defensively, but we take away their backcourt, we could win, we can win this game. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like they beat everybody last year and they lost in the first round. But it is a fantastic question, Danielle, because it's really fascinating. And normally I have kind of an answer schematically for like what you would do. The 7-4 and the angle touches and how they teach how to throw the ball into the kid is really, really well coached. So I'm really curious, honestly, myself, to see how we do it.
Yeah, looking at this box score, I mean,
what was it?
We lost 84-66, but yeah. Ben Gregg fouled out. Anton had 4 fouls. Drew Timmy had 3 fouls. Julian had 3 fouls. We had 19 fouls in the game.
Yeah.
And then they went 10-26 from the 3-point line, which is so like, you got to take away.
Because if you
got to let him shoot, right?
Yeah. What did he have in that game?
What he had, he went 10-16, 23 points.
Yeah. 25 was close.
7 rebounds.
But 10-16 is extremely efficient. Like he just killed us.
And only two fouls.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is but I mean, they lost in the first round last year, so they people know how to they can have a bad game.
Yeah. No, there's a, you know, a formula to beat.
Right.
You know, they're not the, you know, 96 Bulls or whatever, but like I said, after you've seen somebody the second time, usually you improve on, and I'm saying that as an anomaly for type players. Like a good example is, and this is totally random, but I think it applies to this. Like Lamar Jackson, the quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, is 16-1 against the NFC because you only play him every 1 or 2 years, and you don't know really how fast and how good of a thrower he is. But then if you play him the second time, usually teams do better. It's the same thing. Like once it's anomaly and like something that's very unique, it's hard to prep for. But once you've seen it once, you go, okay, now we can kind of do this. So I think we should do better against him or have a better plan. That makes sense.
Totally. Staying with a Gonzaga question about our lineup is, if Ryan Nimhard and Nolan Hickman are the two starting guards, they're a little undersized for some tough defensive sets, and we don't have much rim protection. Could you please explain how the Zags could run a defensive set to stop fast guards or scoring machines like Aiden Mahoney? Would it be like a half-court press like we did last year?
Yeah. Okay, so the crux of the question is we don't have much size in the backcourt with those two guys.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Nolan is a 6'3", 6'4". So he would be classified maybe as a smaller two, but I think his quickness and toughness kind of makes up for it. I'm a big believer in, especially in kind of positionless basketball in today's world, that size matters as far as, you know, length, as far as, you know, your wings need to be able to, you know, defend spots and stuff like that. And then, you know, your guards, you know, obviously you want them have length with their arms and wingspan and all that stuff. But also, I think it gets overvalued a little bit. So I think with like a Mahaney, what we did to him last year is we double teamed it in that second game. You remember that every time he came off ball screens?
Yeah.
We did that the last two games. And then, like the listener asked and made a great point, is we 30 pressed him our 1-2-2 and it really slowed them down. Even they want to play slow, but it made them where they couldn't run four ball screens with a 30 clock. You know what I mean? So they had to, you know, speed themselves up. So I think we're going to be fine in that regard. It's a very valid point to mention that we do get shorter in the backcourt, but I think Dusty Stromer off the bench is 6'7", so he brings size from that position. Steel Venters, I believe, is 6'6". So it's not like we're tiny, tiny, but it is valid to bring up that maybe against some bigger athletic teams that might be an issue, but then you just, it's Monday morning quarterback. Well, we got speed. We'll go around you. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of what B Mike and Fiwi are thinking is we can play extremely fast this season with those two guys. But yeah, it'll be fascinating. It's really a fascinating year with lineups and smaller guards, because we've had smaller guards in the past that have been successful. Kevin Pangos is the one that comes to mind. I mean, he was tiny, still playing professionally, had a great career. Gary Bell was small. That was a small backcourt. I'm trying to think of other small backcourts. You could maybe make an argument for Nigel and Josh Perkins when Josh Perkins played over the two, but Nigel's kind of a bigger one.
Was Joel, is he small?
Yeah, but he's long athletically. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, even though he wasn't like 6'6", but like wingspan, all that stuff matters. Yeah. Like, even like Blake Stepp was 6'4". Dan's probably like 6'1" or 6'2". Santangelo and Quentin Hall, but that was way back. But obviously they're a smaller backcourt and they were successful. So I hate to be like, you know, your question is invalid. It is valid, but I don't think it has as much weight as you would think in the college game.
Totally.
And you know what I'm saying?
And I also think there's just so many what ifs with this team right now. The next question comes from Cheryl. It kind of stays in the same realm. Is like, she was so impressed by Braden Huff at Craziness in the Kennel. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee him working his way into the starting rotation?
And yeah, that's a really good question. There's four bigs that we have this year. And in the last 10 years, we've played three. And so normally we've rotated three. So there's either they're going to switch that up or there's going to be an odd man out. I think they're going to switch that up because the four guys have earned their right to play. Anton's going to play no matter what. He's earned that right.
Yeah.
Okay. We go. Graham EK was the biggest signing as far as the transfer portal or in the big department. He was probably one of the best bigs in the transfer portal that we got from Wyoming the year before, not last year, didn't play last year. He was 20-10 on a team that made it to the NCAA tournament, you know, and a team that hasn't had much success in the Mountain West, you know, so that's a real thing. That's a good basketball conference. It's better than people think.
Totally.
You know, then Ben Gregg really played well in stretches last year, beat out Efton Reed, who ended up transferring, but earned that spot to play 12 to 18 minutes. So in his mind, and rightfully so, he's got to play more, right?
Yeah, totally.
But then you go Braden Huff, and everybody's told me, and I've asked, you know, candidly, who's had a good camp, and everybody always says, and it's not just coaches, players, like Braden looks really good this summer. He's been the hardest worker. And he redshirted last year, and he was Illinois Player of the Year, big-time recruit.
Totally.
So he's not coming here to just sit out and do nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So I am really curious to see how we work in that big rotation. I think Braden can work his way to starting, as crazy as that sounds. Graham, with Graham, he's a more back to the basket, which we like dive. You know, we like a mix of both, but you got to have some easy post touches on angle baskets and stuff. And I think Graham gives us that. That's what Drew was. Obviously, Drew had all the spins and stuff, but early in his career, he was, you know, seal, pocket pass, layup, like Petrusev did that, Shimmy did, like that's, we make bread and butter off that. Totally. A million guys have done that.
Yeah.
But he's been hurt the last 3 years. He's only played one season, I think three or four. Knock on wood that it doesn't happen again. But yeah. Brayton's going to get an opportunity either through injury, hope it doesn't happen, or he's going to get an opportunity just for how great of a camp he has. I think they might have to go with a traditional substitution pattern, which is not bad, but they've gone with three bigs. They might just have to go, okay, Anton, and then Ben, yours backup, and then Graham, and then Braden's your backup, and just do it like that.
Yeah.
Instead of the three rotation, kind of the European style, which I think is the right way to substitute. Not just because Gonzaga does it. I've done it as a coach at the AAU level. I think it's just easier.
Yeah.
It's just, everybody kind of gets to play the same amount of minutes. It's so much easier. And then people are happy. And then you can mix and match. You know, certain kids can do certain different things. Like it's just the right way to do it. A lot of NBA teams do it that way too.
And it keeps players out of foul trouble too, right?
100%. Yeah. Keeps them fresh. And then what it really does, and this is, it might upset like the coaching staff, not that they care, but it really goes at the end of the day when parents call and my kid's not playing, like, well, your kid played 15 and the starter played 21. Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it is true, but like, hey man, you know, and it gives you an out with players. Like you go, well, like, look at the box score, bro. Like you only played 4 minutes less.
Right.
Like, why are you complaining? Like we're a team here, bud. And so you avoid those confrontations. So that's a very good question about Brayden. Cause I've heard he's been fantastic. I was really impressed with him. Like Cheryl said on the question at Craziness, I mean, he looked the best. He had 19 points or whatever. And then I asked, you know, we had Ben Gregg on live on our broadcast. Who had the best camp? Brayden. Same thing with B-Mike and Stephen Gentry. Who had the best camp? Brayden. I mean, that was the first person they said.
That's awesome.
So hopefully he's gonna get a chance, excuse me. But I just, I don't know where or how or where. Or the how, but it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, no,
it's gonna be cool.
It's gonna be very. These next two games are gonna show us a lot. I feel like.
Yeah.
Last question, and then I have two like Adam basketball questions.
Okay.
But what are some of the challenges our Zags will face this season, and who do you think will be the next great leader on the court?
Challenges we're going to face, I think early on, finding a team chemistry, obviously that gets built in the summer when you start practice and then move on to fall camp. But like finding the continuity of not playing with Drew Timmy and Julian Strother, two NBA players that can, you know, score and get put up numbers in a hurry. I think that is going to be a natural issue. Doesn't mean it's going to be like life or death for us as a club. But I think finding continuity and rhythm is a real concern just because it's new faces. I think Maui's going to be difficult. I mean, we just talked about Zach Edey. That's going to be a hard game. And then in the second round, you play Syracuse or Tennessee. We've had great success there. It's been a fun tournament. I'm glad that we're going to Honolulu. It's going to be in Honolulu, but that tournament is still going. You know, and then I think just trying to keep, you know, the complete unit going forward, because there's like 10, 11 guys, and we've talked about in episode one and episode two about the roster. There's going to be some guys left out just on numbers.
Yeah.
So like Fiwi does a good job controlling the locker room, always has, and that's the culture that we create. There's going to be some unhappy guys. So sometimes that's always a difficult task to manage you know, during a season when guys are, you know, getting playing time and stuff like that.
The question I have, the follow-up to that is, with NIL and with players' personalities now, like I don't know the players personally on Gonzaga that well, but that seems very real. Like keeping players to stick around for another year is tough, but is it saying you'll get an opportunity if an injury happens? Like, is it, because like these guys want to make it to the NBA, obviously, and and that's what, like, do you think, how do you keep the, how do you get, keep players like motivated if they're not playing? I guess that's a question.
That's a really good question. I think you always have to, I think a lot of it has to do with the kid's upbringing too. You know, if you're raising a household that you're going to, you know, you're going to run into problems in your life. Nothing's going to be handed to you. All those messages that our parents, I assume told, you know, I'm sure your parents told you that. My parents did, but sometimes that doesn't happen in a lot of households. Yeah. And some people are like, go to the next place. But I think as a player, you got to understand if you're coming to Gonzaga, there might be a year that you don't play a lot, and it's not a thing to do with against you. It's just numbers, and the guy in front of you just did the same thing you did 3 years ago or whatever. So it's just how it goes. That's why Braden, I think, redshirted. I think he maybe would have played, but he was like, "Why waste a year? But I need to get stronger." But like Drew Timmy's not coming off the floor,
right?
And Anton's probably not coming off the floor. Mm-hmm. And then he had Efton Reed and Ben Gregg in front of him, so he's like. You know, so that's a good question. I think culture helps the guys you have in the locker room. We always have a good one. But I think part of it is just how the kids are raised too. I mean, the stuff you can't control is like, how are you with adversity? Are you a kid that, you know, can push through it? And sometimes you need those tools to be taught to you later in life. That's fine. But also what is mom and dad or guardian or whatever, AU coach, high school coach, whoever you look up to basketball wise saying at home, like, oh, you're getting screwed, man. Or are they like, hey man, calm down. It's not going your way, but this is a place that develops players. And there's been plenty of guys who didn't play right away that still, you know, made it to the NBA and have longer careers because they probably stayed.
Right.
And they got better. And, you know, this is an NBA type offense. So another year of learning it is probably better than going in and going with your eyes like, oh my God, what is this? But that's a very good question with NIL and the theory, which I'm pretty right, is that it's kind of turning into minor league sports. That's a real thing with, hey, I'm getting paid F this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or I could just leave.
Totally.
You know, it's different. So anyway.
Because, yeah, those NIL guys, even if they're not playing, or they want to play because the sponsors want them to play. Like, that seems such a – that's the weirdest part of – the NIL stuff.
The NIL stuff is again, it's a fascinating deal, and it always sounds like a get off my lawn take, but like the collective stuff is just so convoluted on and so gray area because you're not really getting paid on your name, image, or likeness. You're just like collectives are just like, here's money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, I think the intention of NIL is fantastic. But I think there needs to be some barriers, and it's not just, it's not like you want to not have people get money for what they deserve. That's not what I'm saying. But like, you can't. It's turned into like buying like 17-year-old recruits.
Yeah,
you just, that feels weird to me.
It does feel weird.
You know what I'm saying? Like going into like a 17-year-old seniors. Here's, you know, you're like buying a kid for hoops. It's weird.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just weird.
And if the rumors are true that now players are like requesting or not, I don't want to say demanding, but like saying
that is demanding.
Demanding like money on visits.
That's like, insane.
Yeah.
Like, like we've all heard about the brown paper bag stuff, and I've heard it. It was real, like in the 80s, 90s, and, you know, 2000s, like in the movie, like The Program, you know, if that's an old school reference, but like that stuff did happen. But that was for like, you know, Kevin Garnett to come to Duke, like, or whatever, or Kentucky or whatever, you know, like once in a generation type players. Now it's like every kid's like, well, I'm entitled to this. And it's like, hold on, chief. You know what I mean? Like, let's calm down here. But I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Awesome. Well, I have two fun, like one's a high school question. One's a college question. This one comes from Tate Kelly. He asks, what is your greatest high school hoops memory playing for Meade High School?
Oh, that's a really good one. There's a lot, obviously. I didn't play freshman year. I played on the freshman team. And then my sophomore year, I came off the bench. And then so my junior and senior year, I led the league in scoring, broke the individual single season scoring record my junior year, and then increased it my senior year, and then broke the total scoring record for the GSL. So my high school career was fun. We went to state my junior year. My sophomore year, we lost in a game to go to state, but it was a huge jump for Meade High School basketball at the time.
Yeah.
And then my senior year, we went undefeated and lost in the championship game. So I have a ton of Really good, positive memories, great teammates, played for a great coach in Glenn Williams. Probably one of the coolest memories was we're playing my junior year. We're playing in a game to go to state, and they used to, it's different now. Yep. And I don't want to bore the people that are listening who are not familiar with like locals, you know, Washington Interscholastic Athletic Association. Now you get the state, but right. It's like the paths are a lot easier now because like the GSL, there's like some teams are in the 4A, some teams are 3A. There's actually some 2A teams that you play, like Rogers and Shadle sometimes, and NC, you know, like yeah. It's different. You used to have to go to like districts, then regionals. Or districts, yeah, regionals, then states. So like, it was kind of a gauntlet. And then you'd play some multiple loser out games. And so you'd have a fantastic season, have a bad. So anyway,
yeah.
We play Shadle Park my junior year. We haven't beat them all season long. We end up losing late. So we have to play Central Valley to, game to go to state. And we're in the locker room. And this is in the Yakima Sun Dome. And it's an absolute dump. And we're playing on Idaho State's old floor. I mean, it was terrible, like a terrible venue to have a game to go to state, like awful. And normally we'd run out with like 25 minutes to 20 minutes after team, you know, our coach would come in and team talk, and there's like 18 and it's getting to 15 and everybody's kind of looking around and you're just like, what the hell's going on? And our coach, Glenn Williams, comes in and he's like bawling his eyes out. So everybody's kind of like, what the hell's going on? It's just like random time to do it. And we had a kid on our team, one of our managers that had, I think he had a brain tumor early in life, but it got fixed. But he had some cognitive issues, obviously. So yeah. His delays weren't because of just how he was born. So how do I say this? I'm trying to make sure I'm politically correct. But right. He knew he was normal, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't know how else to describe it, before the surgery.
Right.
And he said to our coach privately, man, I wish I really could go out and play today. Mm. And my coach lost it. That's how much of like a shirt off your back guy.
Yeah.
So he like was bawling. He's like, you guys, and he told us what he said. And he's like, you guys need to go play your tails off. And that's all he said to us. We ran out of the locker room. We weren't losing that game.
That's awesome.
Win that game, go to state. First time in 10 years.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Yes, yeah, something like yeah. that. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So it was like goosebumps, chills.
Totally.
And it was just a completely random, you know, time to have an emotional moment. My coach lost it, and we obviously it pumped us up, but it was just like, it's one of those like, dude, you're lucky that you're playing in this game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's people that don't get this opportunity. So it was fascinating. That's probably my best moment. Obviously, like there's a lot of wins that were fantastic, but that's the one that sticks out to me.
That's awesome. That gives me chills as well.
Yeah, like, it was cool. Incredible.
Yeah.
And we beat Central Valley fourth time that year. We won by like four, just pure grind out.
Yeah.
Both teams like, we're not going to lose, and we won. So yeah, it was awesome.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, it's Olive. I just got my first ICCU debit card. Now I just need some money in my account. If only there was someone who could transfer in some allowance.
Wow.
Last question comes from Neil Schoenberg. Shooting was your calling card. You had some epic lines during your junior year at Gonzaga. If you were shooting around today with no defender closing out or a hand in your face, how many threes would you make out of 10?
That's a good question. Well, okay, let me give you context. I've talked about it a little bit. I coach my daughter's AAU team, and now I'm coaching my son's 7th, 8th grade, or 7-year-old, 8-year-old team, so little guys. That answer depends on which basketball I'm using. Am I using a women's ball or a men's ball? Because I've shot nothing but a women's ball the last 6 years, and yeah. I still make them.
Yeah.
But I've picked up a men's ball when I work out my nephew every once in a while. He's a junior at Rogers. And it don't go in very much.
Okay.
And it feels heavy.
Yeah.
So really good question. Like sometimes I'll like, you know, we'll do rebounding drills where, you know, coach shoot. And, you know, we do this drill with the kids where they close out and then have to shuffle and then reclose out. And you'll shot like teaching them yeah. boxing out. And sometimes I can string like 8 or 9 in a row.
Yeah.
But those first like 6 or 7 are way off. So that's a really good, really good question.
Because you're in the gym a lot.
Obviously. I am. Exactly. I'm touching a basketball multiple times a week.
Yeah.
but they're always girls' balls.
Right.
And those are smaller. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, this is the reality.
Yeah.
They're easier to, but every time I touch a men's ball, I'm like, man, this feels weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, can this one even go in? You know what I mean? Like, so really good question. I think I can still, if I get going, but like if there's defense or anything out there, like I don't have a chance, man. Brutal. Can't run anymore.
Little follow up to that. You posted a really awesome video this summer out at the lake cabin, mm-hmm. and you were making like, I mean, it's just in your back, and like that a little hoop that's like, but you were, I think you made like 5 in a row, mm-hmm. and it was cool to see.
yeah, we put a little 8.5 hoop up there,
right.
and we have it on grass, but it's one of those, it's just a cool aesthetic. But every once in a while I can get going, and that's when I start talking trash to kids. I probably had a few if I'm out there. And so it gets, your dad used to play. And, shut up, dad. You know, it's like, shut up. It's fun. Do we got any more, man? That was fun. I kind of like could put it in the hot seat, even though they were, nothing too crazy.
I mean, a lot of people were asking just starting lineup questions. And then there was, the leader of the team. And
I didn't even, that wasn't one of the first, I didn't even cover that. So that's my fault. But I think Ryan Nemhard's going to move into that capacity just because he's proven it. Obviously Anton, but I think Anton's a quiet kid. He's a leader with actions.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying he's completely non-vocal, but I think his personality is just a chill personality, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Ryan will move into that deal. It is funny when we interviewed Ben Gregg on a broadcaster in Craziness in the Kennel. He's like, these guys look at me like I'm a, like I'm the old guy now. And he's like, I am, but it just feels weird. Mm-hmm. You know, cause he's a junior. So it's a really good question, but I think Ryan Nemhard is the front runner for that. And mm-hmm. I think guys respect him enough because he, played well at Creighton and his brother played here. So some of the guys know Andrew, mm-hmm. I mean, there's just those ties. And then obviously your point guard, it's funny. People are going to laugh at this, but you're always nice to your point guard,
right?
You're always nice to your point guards. They got to obviously throw you the ball. Yeah. So like I was always nice to Derek Rabbit,
right?
You know, he's my boy, but I was always, when I first got to campus, hey man, what's up? I'm always open on the wing, man. I think he'll naturally fit in that role, but I think it's with cause because he's a good player and he's proven it.
Yeah, no, I think the player questions are just so tough right now. I know it is.
It's all conjecture, and obviously the show is based on what my thoughts are.
Yeah.
But like, there's so many moving pieces, and obviously, I don't want to beat a dead horse either.
Right.
It's like, dude, I got to talk about potential starting lineups. There's a lot of options.
Totally.
And it sounds funny, but like, check out the box score and Baylor. The Baylor Gonzaga scrimmage game, that'll kind of tell you.
Oh yeah,
minutes played. Not that it's a finality is what I'm trying to say, but that's where it's at right now.
Yeah,
and we'll find out. excuse me, when we play Lewis Clark State College, but obviously the first game versus Yale, who's going to be a solid team, and that's not just me trying to hype it up. They've won games in the Ivy League in the last few years, like 20 wins a season.
Mm-hmm.
November 10th is where you'll see. Okay. Who's coming off the bench right away? Who's allowed to take a few shots?
Yeah.
And then obviously if it's a blowout, you'll see who's playing blowout minutes. Not that that's a true indicative of how you're going to be the whole season, but that's where a coach thinks you're at right now.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some hurt feelings is what I'm trying to get at this year. Not in a bad way, but it's number games, man. Like I've been on teams, obviously a lot of my NBA career was like number game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like on really good teams, like
right.
just how it works out.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel like the buzz this year is just so, I have a terrible memory of like I just always forget what happened like 10 years ago for Gonzaga. But like,
I'm bad at it too.
I don't remember a time where like there was this many questions about the team.
Never.
And like, and
awesome.
now this Big 12 buzz.
It's awesome for us. We get content every year.
Exactly.
the show can go on.
Yeah. No.
But yeah. No, I think it's going to be like that. Most of the years because transfer portal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as simple as that in NIL. And I know people, we talk about it a lot, but it's the new reality. So every year you're going to have question marks and you're going to have new players that are going to be playing like prominent roles
mm-hmm.
in a rotation that you never you know, you didn't recruit during the year, you know, then all of a sudden this guy's coming here. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause you don't, it's not a normal like high school recruiting process. So it's just, it's fascinating. It's great for us. And I, like I mentioned on episode 3, is like last year was more fun. We go to the Elite Eight, but like everybody didn't like our team completely, but like it was fun being like in closer games and like, it was cool. Like, yes, I love, you know, being a number one seed and all that stuff, but it was also kind of fun, like to be like, hey man, you know, we won by 12 tonight instead of 35, and you're just like falling asleep when you're calling the games. And then, I mean, I have people that it's like, I turn the game off at halftime. I'm like, I don't blame you, dude. I've done that when I wasn't covering. Did you watch the Gonzaga game? What part? And you see the look on people's face, and I'm like, I don't know, man. I turned it off, man. It's nothing against it. I'm not watching this crap, or like it's on in the background, and you know how it is. You do something else, you know, you start cooking or whatever. And
I mean, I get to go to the all the home games because I get this in the press box, but like there are some times in the WCC games where I'm just like, this game is
Like let me beat the crowd. It's freezing out.
I'm gonna go listen to Adam and Tom on the radio, finish this up, see what kind of stories I can listen to that.
We'll
definitely do this again this season.
It's fantastic. I like the questions. I think it's great that you know, because it gives us a different angle on what people want to know, because I think I cover as much as I can, but obviously there's certain things. And I know everybody says this, but it's true. There's no such thing as a dumb question either. Like if it's something that you may think that I might think is obvious, I'm not going to embarrass you on the podcast to the listener who submits it. But like sometimes, you know, when I go over terminology and certain things, I don't want to like go over people's head. And I, you know, when I do the radio broadcast, I try to take pride in that. It's explaining it in layman's terms. And I'm no like hardcore expert, but I know more, obviously I have a show about it, but I know more than most people about hoops.
Right.
But I want to explain it to a way that makes it where, you know, the casual to the barely above casual fan can be like, oh, that helped broaden my horizon or my knowledge for basketball. So then when I do watch a next Gonzaga game, I'm not complaining about something or upset about something. Adam explained it. Oh, that makes sense. Why isn't this guy playing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or things like that. Or why are we playing this team in the regular, you know, the non-conference? Well, talked about scheduling and wins and
100%,
you know, stuff like that. So
I mean, feedback I always get about the show is they love your perspective on hoops and how you go a little bit deeper than other shows that they might listen to. And so I think
I appreciate
people, people really respect that. And it's definitely, I definitely am learning a lot.
That's the point that you know, we want to be an insider type show.
Totally.
You know, but we're not going straight like analytical and nerd on it. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like, That stuff's boring. I know there's a value in that too, but you know, I want to make it where like if you were sitting next to me at a bar and we were watching the game, you asked me a question, I could explain it to you, but I didn't talk the whole time when we were watching it with me because I don't want to explain the whole time. So if you ever see me out, ask me like a couple and then I'll give you my fair answer, but I don't want to like talk the whole time about like Blake Stepp's career or something like that. I'll just be like, I don't care, dude. It happens. It happens in a nice way, and it's mostly and people are trying to be nice, and that's what I mean. But sometimes I'm like, I don't care, man. No offense, I don't really care.
Totally,
and it's not a bad thing, but I just don't really care. So
it's a careful balance, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like any topic, like if you talk about it too much, it gets boring.
Totally,
you know. Yeah. And then so that's politics, that's religion, that's culture, music. Like if you talk about it nonstop, after a while, doesn't it get boring?
Yes, it does.
Right. Yeah. Well, so that's kind of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, next episode will be all about religion and politics.
Yeah. Right. And no more sponsors. Shows canceled. What happened? We dipped our toe into the wrong stuff, especially in today's society. No way. Not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Me either.
Yeah. No thanks. But yeah, we good?
We're good. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to McGilvery Environmental, Idaho Central Credit Union, and HDG Architecture for sponsoring the show. Thank you for listening. Episode 4. Keep listening.
Yeah.